Be thou my feet and guide my walking. Be thou my eyes that I can see. Open my heart, give me compassion. Hear my cry and answer me.
Have you guys ever heard of Brother Juniper? Some of you. Brother Juniper was one of St. Francis's flock. So it cracks me up that St. Francis is the makeshift prayer song of the day by the accident of Beta Breakers. Totally meant to be. Brother Juniper was always getting in trouble because he was always giving his clothing away. And the robes and frocks that they wore were very expensive, and it took a really long time to make them because they had to weave them and they had to sew them. So it wasn't like you could just go down to the local thrift store and just get yourself a new Franciscan frock. Brother Juniper always gave them away. And so St. Francis, who was the patron saint of the poor and giving things away, went up to Brother Juniper and said, "You must promise me not to give your robes away anymore. And I request that you take this as a vow of obedience to me," because they knew he wouldn't agree to it. So Brother Juniper did as he was supposed to. He had taken a vow of obedience, and he said that he would no longer give away his robes. So the next day, when he was walking down the road and he came across someone who didn't have a robe, he said to them, "I am not allowed to give you my robe, but you may take it." My grandmother has a bit of Brother Juniper in her spirit, although she doesn't wander around naked and without clothing wherever she goes. But she does have a room in the basement of her house where whenever she's at a rummage sale or a store and she sees something that maybe possibly someone could want someday in the future, but maybe can't afford for themselves and would never want to buy it if you were there with them shopping, they'd say, "No, no, you don't need to get that for me." She would just buy it when they're not there and have it in her house as if it's some sort of burden to her that there's this room full of stuff. And so every once in a while, when you come over to her house, she'll say, "Will you please go downstairs? That room is just so full of stuff." And she'll lead you to the things that she on purpose bought for you. And she just gives it all away. I remember one time I said something about liking her sweatshirt, and she did take her shirt off and try to give it to me. My grandmother's 76, so it wasn't quite my style. But the fact that she was willing to do it really meant something. So I think maybe I inherited a little bit of Brother Juniper down the line. You might probably have the easiest way of telling, because I don't have any shoes on today. Because I passed someone who had no shoes this morning, and they got mine. I think it's probably the only reason plausible that God gave me size 13 and a half women's shoes. Because most men with no shoes wear 11 and a half in men's. The other thing that you might notice is that these socks are actually finger puppets that I'm wearing right now. And that's because last night I spent the night living on the streets in the Castro at Harvey Milk Plaza with the homeless youth who spend a lot of nights out on the street and have been finding their services getting cut. And so, as I have typically done by myself or with a group of people on retreat and meditation, where I go and sleep on the streets for 7 days and seven nights and, you know, ponder and reflect and meditate, I took the time last night to do it not with other pastors and other spiritual folk, but with actual homeless youth. And it was a much different experience. Not just because it had a deeper sense of realness, or because there was a way in which sleeping out with people who truly had nowhere else to go really tugs at you in that place that makes you really want to get out and do something to make sure that tomorrow night those kids aren't sleeping on the streets, because I won't have to be. And so we gathered with the purpose of trying to highlight the fact that 40% of youth who are homeless are gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, not because they've run away because they had some sort of idea of escaping families, or not because they were troubled kids, but because their parents had a moment of hesitation in their ability to unconditionally love these children. Or their communities did, or their churches did, or whoever did. But these children learned somehow in their bodies that living on the streets in San Francisco, that becoming people with severe mental health issues, that becoming people with severe drug addictions, that becoming people who sell their bodies in order to find clean, dry places to sleep was better than living with their families, was better than living in towns and cities across the country where they saw that moment of hesitation and love. It was better. And my hope was to raise attention and to get enough people to know about what was happening, even if they were only afraid in a brand new way because I was sleeping on the streets and they were worried about my health, about whether or not I was going to catch cold because I didn't have any shoes on. To bring awareness to something that really is something we should not have to think is an out-of-the-way thing. We're not all going to be Brother Juniper and give our clothes away every time we see someone who needs some. But the fact that children shouldn't be homeless on the streets, that's pretty much a no-brainer, right? I don't know anyone who would argue children should be out on the streets, even if we don't know what to do about it. So here's where we get to our confusing John-like scripture text, right? John's very confusing, part because John's a poet, John's a mystic, John's someone who is speaking to a crowd who knew those other stories and got it, but wanted something a little bit deeper. John often speaks in kind of silly rhymes that don't always make sense, like Jesus is light from light and truth and light. The way, Jesus. They don't even always feel like they're complete sentences in the Gospel of John. And the text today is kind of like that, alluding that Jesus is a shepherd, but then all of a sudden Jesus is a gate, and that it should all make sense because it's explained. But what's happening in this story is there's three characters. There's the gatekeeper, the person who turns the doorknob and opens the gate. There's the shepherd, the one that the sheep recognize and the sheep follow. And then there's the gate itself. And it's revealed at the end that Jesus is the one who is the gate itself. And I think that's something that we don't pause long enough to remember. Because there's a lot of people who are angry and are going to wave a Bible around and tell you that Jesus is the person who holds on to that door handle and decides who gets to come in and out of the gate, right? And there are other people who are going to tell you that Jesus is the shepherd, and there's a lot of other verses in the Bible that will tell you that. That we are the sheep who follow the voice, and that's where we go. But in this text, Jesus is simply the gate, something that's opened by someone else, that other people lead through, and other people follow through. Just a swinging door, no agency on its own, maybe a squeak, depending upon the door. What I think is really beautiful about that text is the way, for me, it brings me back to the baptism story. This idea, not that it's something you check off the list so that you can be a proper church member, or not that it's something that you do because everyone does it. But that true, deep, mystical Book of John meaning for baptism, the idea that with a little bit of water that came out of an exorcism ritual to get rid of our demons, that with a little bit of water, there's nothing we could possibly ever do to screw it up. There's nothing we could ever possibly do to make God not love us and not name us and not claim us to become unchosen people of God. We might not have been chosen originally, right? That was the Jews. But by taking on this water and being in this ritual, we transform ourselves into people who can never screw it up. Meaning everybody gets to go through the gate. And that baptism water and that Jesus story is that gate, that welcome that's opening up to us. So my hope from this story is that in the same way that people have been talking through time about the way that marijuana is a gateway drug, or such and such leads to something else, or that homophobia leads to homeless kids in San Francisco, that our true gateway will be Jesus. And that it be a gateway of welcome and infectious following that comes after that. And for me, it's giving things away. It's being with the homeless. It's bringing joy to some of the deepest, darkest, hopeless places that exist. That's the thing that I became addicted to doing on behalf of this radical welcome of God. The call, then, is not for you to all do the exact same thing. We don't need everyone to be Brother Juniper, right? We need a Francis, and we need a Claire. We need everyone to have their own mystical way of seeing the world. We need a couple of birds to listen to what's being said. And so I encourage you to find the thing that God is stirring up inside of you, that thing that you're able to do because you have this radical welcome, the thing that you can do boldly and proudly in the world, that if everybody told you it was the exact wrong thing to do, you'd still be doing it. Because that thing is that gift that God has given you to be in the world. And maybe it's something like accounting, right? Maybe it's knitting. Maybe it's cleaning toilets. Maybe it's being a parent. Maybe it's counting the offering. It can be so many different things, because this is not a request from a God who says, go and do this thing. There are other verses that say that. But this gate opens wide to a pasture of possibility that allows us to be and do what we are called to do and to be. And even when we don't, we can never screw it up. So if the worst thing that we do is to tell other people that they can never screw it up, that's everything, right? If we are the infectious, addictive people who go out spreading the news that you can never screw it up, that there's always a welcome, that there's always a gate and a way and a possibility, that there's always a hope, that there's always a fire burning, that there's always us here on a Sunday or some generation down the line that's going to be here on a Sunday. That's what we can take from this text. And particularly for those of you who have a hard time seeing the way that you could ever do anything possibly as a part of God's plan, or that anything you do could ever possibly be as good as giving away shoes. Particularly for you, your text is today. Because the gate doesn't do anything. And that's Jesus. That's pretty big. If the most important person in the book is a very passive agent, it's really okay if we don't feel like what we're doing is useful or helpful in the world, because I assure you that it is. And when you need it, we'll push you to do more, right? There's other texts for that. But today is the day of being with the gate. And so I invite you to have that same kind of giving and joy and infection that this world is so desperately needing. and I'll pray it again. Be thou my feet and guide my walking. Be thou my eyes that I can see. Open my heart, give me compassion. Hear my cry and answer me. Amen.